Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 17, the divisions of faith, text number 16 is on the board there. Is that right, 16? Manak prasadak samyatvam Monam atma vinigraha Bhava samshudir ityetat Tapho manasam uchate Manak prasada, satisfaction of the mind. Samyatvam, being without duplicity toward others. Monam, gravity. Atma, of the self. Vinigraha, control. Bhava, of one's nature. Samshuddhi, purification. Iti, thus. Etat, this. Tapa, austerity. Manasam, of the mind. Uchite, it is said to be. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. Purport. To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction in the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification. And so there is no possibility of the mind's becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity in mental activities. So the verse again. Manak prasadak samyatvam monam atma vinigraha bhava samshudir etyetad tapho manasam uchate. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has mentioned in many places the mind, especially in the verse Udarat Atmanatmanam Atmanam Avasadayat Atmaivi Atmano Bandur Atmaiva Ripar Atmanaha, that a man, one must deliver himself with the help of the mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. And the purport Prabhupada says, in material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind and senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature and this way the conditioned soul may be saved. One should not degrade himself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The word he is used for emphasizing this point. One must do it. In other words, the mind has to be engaged either in thinking about Krishna or something other than Krishna. The reality is that there's nothing but Krishna, and the illusion is that there's something other than Krishna. But by hearing from the Vedic literature, especially Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, then one can see how everyone and everything is related to Krishna. Hearing is the first point, but it's not the ending point. It's not necessarily the end point. Because we hear, but we hear with the idea of trying to understand. And understand means to see things properly. And seeing things properly means to see how everyone and everything is connected to Krishna, and therefore being willing to utilize everything with it, which is within our influence in Krishna's service. Therefore Krishna says, tad buddhyas tad atmanas tad nishtas tad parayanaha kachanyapana avritim jnana niruddha kalmashaha. Tad buddhyas, one's intelligence. So in the previous verse we had heard about intelligence. Intelligence is manifested in speaking. It's because we have intelligence, therefore we can speak. The more intelligence one has, the more one can explain how everything and everyone is connected with Krishna. And in the previous verse, Krishna had said that anuvega karam vakyam satya priya hitam chayat svarayapyasnam chaiva vangmaya tappa uchite. That there's an austerity of speaking also, that it should be pleasing, it should be beneficial, it should be truthful, it should follow the Vedic literature, and it shouldn't agitate people's minds. In other words, whatever we're saying, sound vibration is so powerful, it spreads to a great distance, and it enters into our minds. So the mind should be enlivened by Krishna consciousness. And that depends upon hearing words that actually have Krishna conscious intelligence behind them. And as Prabhupada repeats here over and over again, that if Krishna is there, then the desire for sense gratification should diminish. As soon as we try to become desirous of gratifying the senses without Krishna consciousness, in other words, when it says vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udrapasta vegam, etan vegam yo visheheta dira, sarvam apimam prativim sashishat, to control, as it mentioned in this verse, is manak prasadam somya tvam. Control the mind doesn't mean to stop the mind. Control means to direct. Just like we control anything in this world by directing it. If you're playing basketball, you direct the ball into the hoop. You don't stop the ball. You throw it in a way that it goes to a certain direction. Driving a car, you control the car with a steering wheel by making sure that the car stays on the road. You don't stop the car. I'm going to control the car. I'm not going to let it move. No, we control the car by keeping it on the road when we're driving. Similarly, controlling the mind doesn't mean to stop the mind. It means to place it on Krishna. And that doesn't mean we stop eating or sleeping or even mating and defending, but we control it in such a way as that it's used in Krishna's service. Instead of gratifying the demands of the senses, the vegams, we use the senses to gratify Krishna, and if Krishna is there, then the demands of the senses aren't there. Of course, for instance, Krishna says that yoga yukta, yukta hara viharasya, yukta cheta sukaramasu, yukta swapnu vodasya, yoga bhavati dukaha, adhyasnatasu yogosti, na chai kanta manashnata, na chaiti swapnu shilasya, jagato naiva arjuna, that the devotee doesn't eat too much, and he also doesn't eat too little. He doesn't sleep too much, and he doesn't sleep too little. In other words, what is necessary for one person may be different from another. So that requires intelligence to figure out how to properly utilize the senses, even in eating or sleeping or any other activity of the body, so that it's in order to maintain the body for service in Krishna consciousness. Just like a car requires certain maintenance. But we don't spend the whole day, hopefully, just polishing the car, riding the car for no reason around town. No, the car has a purpose to be utilized in Krishna's service. And if we utilize in Krishna's service, that's called properly utilizing the car for control. Not whimsically, especially in the mind, as Krishna says, Trividanarakasyedam, dvaram nashitam atmanaha, kama krota tata lovas, tasmat etam trayam chayet. There are three gates leading to hell, naming lust, anger, and greed. So every sane person tries to become free from these three gates because they lead to the degradation of the self. So our involvement in the material world begins with the subtly, with the mind and the intelligence. Or as Prabhupada writes in the introduction, we actually don't work with the senses, we first work with the mind and the intelligence. Unless we have intelligence, we don't know what's going on. And if we don't know what's going on, just like in the darkness, if you can't see what's going on, how can you do anything? If you're going to try to solve a crossword puzzle in the darkness, it's going to be very difficult. If you can't even see the pen, you can't see the crossword puzzle, you can't see anything. So simply, without intelligence, we can't see anything properly, and therefore it's very hard to do anything. But it is the mind, well, Prabhupada writes in the purport of the third chapter, text number 39, that material existence begins with hearing. Hearing the glories of sense gratification. Actually, sense gratification is not so glorious, but it could be made, it can be glorified in such a way that it seems attractive. You can tie a nice ribbon on it, put it in a nice colorful box, spend $1 million on advertisement, show people smoking your cigarette with a big smile on their face, giving testimonies of how they became healthier and stronger. They cure their lung diseases by smoking cigarettes. So you can spend advertising, you can have scientists in white coats, as they did. It's a fact that originally they claimed that the doctors on television would claim that smoking cigarettes cures asthma and all kinds of respiratory diseases. And indeed, they used to pay actors extra money if they smoked cigarettes in the movies. So then, because people are in ignorance, they don't know, and there was no information to the contrary, people believed that let me smoke cigarettes and become cool. They had a cigarette called Kool. And Prabhupada said one time, they're blowing out, they're breathing in fire, and they're saying it's Kool. People are so fooled. I don't think that brand is anymore a Kool. It got burned out. It's not Kool anymore. In any case, by advertisement, you can claim any, you can probably convince people about anything. So by hearing the advertisements, the glories of sense gratification, then the mind becomes filled with ideas of sense gratification. And naturally, we're curious. And we think, what would it be like? What would it be like to have a chocolate sundae with 3 different ice cream flavors and half a liter of it with whipped cream? So there's a big, beautiful picture of the ice cream with chocolate on top and 3 different flavors and happy people eating it. Beautiful girl with, you know, smiling. You think, yeah, I should enjoy too. What it would be like to enjoy like they are. And so the intelligence, the mind becomes filled with ideas of sense gratification. And actually, when the mind is filled with ideas of sense gratification, the senses become agitated. You got to try it out. Come on. You know. Why are you torturing us? We're never going to let you have peace unless you actually get that ice cream sundae. And the mind keeps on hammering. The sensors are just ablaze. You got to do it. And then we try it out. Then we say, all right, how can I buy it? Where's the money? Where do I get the money from? Where is the shop? How many should I buy? Maybe I have to get one for my girlfriend also, or else she'll complain. So then with our intelligence, we try to figure out how to get it. So then lusty intelligence influences the soul to acquire a false ego. In other words, we know by experience, we've done this a million times, or a billion or a trillion times before, it never worked out. But therefore we need a false ego. To say, well, even if it's not going to work out, but at least you did the best you could, you were sincere. And there was a drop of happiness in the desert of sense gratification, but it's better than nothing. Might as well smile and enjoy. So then lusty intelligence influences the false ego, influences the soul to acquire a false ego, to identify oneself with the mind and senses and think, this is my interest in life. This is what I'm here for. This is my purpose. This is why I live, is to gratify my senses. This is the highest goal of life. And therefore one gratifies the senses, and it's usually one becomes disappointed and says, my mind, you told me I was going to enjoy, but I'm suffering, I ate too much. Or I slept and you told me you were going to wake me up, but it's been 3 hours now and I'm still, you know, I've woken up and I'm twice as tired as I was before. You lied to me. No, no, I tried to do the best you could, you know. Don't complain, you know, I'm your friend. You just slept on the wrong side, that's all. I warned you, but you didn't listen to me. You're a rascal. So we try it again and again and we get the same result, so that therefore we're considered to be crazy. Everyone in the material world is more or less crazy because they're doing the same thing, punat punas charvata, charvananam, getting fooled the same way every time, and this time thinking it's going to be different. Therefore, Krishna conscious intelligence is quite simple. As Krishna says, if you're a mouse, then you should eat like a mouse. And if you're an elephant, then you should eat like an elephant. But if you're a mouse and you try and eat like an elephant, you can expect problems. And even if you're an elephant, but if you eat like a mouse, then you're also going to find yourself in difficulty. So the idea of using intelligence is not to deny the mind, to negate the mind or to negate the senses, but to utilize them in a way which is intelligent, which will actually keep the body fit for devotional service so that we can actually think about Krishna without disturbance. Therefore, as Prabhupada keeps on repeating, whether it's tapasya, tapo, or gravity, maunam, the real thing is to understand what Krishna wants and what Maya is influencing us in such a way as to bewilder us and keep us entangled in sense gratification. Therefore, at the end of the second chapter, Krishna says, apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti tadvat yadvat tadvat kamasa vishanti sarve. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamiyam pravishanti sarve. What's the next one? So shanti mat noti nakama kami. That one who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into an ocean, which is always being filled, but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So that ocean means an ocean of Krishna consciousness. The more the mind is absorbed in seeing everyone and everything in relation to Krishna, the more the mind is absorbed in Krishna's name, his forms, his quality, his associates, and his activities, then the more one finds satisfaction. Somya tvam atma monam atma vinigraha, atma vinigraha. The more the mind becomes satisfied by vishayam nidhi vartante, Niraharasya Dehinam Rasavarjam Rasopyasya Pramdrishva Nivartate. Then the other way is restraining the senses, but that will not work for very long. Then a man may restrain his senses from objects of the senses, but if his mind dwells on sense objects, that will not be very good. Vishaya Nivartate. The invited soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though that taste for sense object remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. So that higher taste is ultimately to hear about Krishna. Hear about Krishna in such a way is that we actually start remembering him. We awaken our minds to consciousness of Krishna. Then in that transcendental experience, then material existence seems rather dull. Like most sane people, if they walk by a river and they see an apple tree and they see the reflection of the apple in the water, most of them don't go for the reflection. They try to get the real apple. But someone, by advertisement, they say, actually, the apple in the water is much more juicy than the apple in the tree. It's healthier because it has extra water on it. So one may dive into the water looking for the apple and the reflection and become quite disappointed. So Krishna consciousness is simply to taste the real apple, which is being delivered in this age through sound, the holy name, and the Vedic literature. Taste the real apple so that one's senses become purified in Krishna consciousness, and therefore everything becomes enjoyable, even this world becomes enjoyable. Everything becomes blissful. But the real substance where everything comes from can be also experienced, namely Krishna, who is so kindly appearing in his sound vibration of the Vedic literature and his holy name. And if we get the higher taste, then the senses become pacified, lust dissipates. If there's no lust, there won't be any greed or anger. If there's no lust, anger, and greed, there can't be illusion. If there's no illusion, we won't forget who we are. And if we don't forget who we are, we'll have intelligence how to engage in Krishna's service in such a way as that our life becomes more and more successful, progressively. Didami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna says if we're constantly engaged in the service and worshiping with love, then our intelligence won't be taken away by Maya. Instead, he'll give us more and more intelligence by which we can make spiritual progress. So either we're going to listen to Maya or we'll listen to Krishna, and that's our choice. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? How much we can make advancement. Just imagine, before when we sit down to take prasadam, we actually look at the plate and try to figure out how much can I actually eat. Rather than just start eating and hope for the best. Yes?
What does that actually mean to honoring prasadam? What should be our position or need? What that means to serve, I don't understand quite.
Honor it? Well, honor, we should see it in relation to Krishna. That this, as the prayer goes, Krishna has given us this prasadam. Didn't appear out of nowhere. And the prasadam was offered to Krishna. So the idea that this is going to be utilized for my sense gratification, the consciousness of the people who prepared it for sense gratification, is no longer there because it's been offered to Krishna. Therefore, it has a different consciousness behind it. It may appear to be the same food, but the consciousness that actually infuses the food is different because it was offered to Krishna. Now it's Krishna prasad. We don't realize, or sometimes we're not so conscious, that when food is being prepared, the consciousness of the person who's preparing it is infused in the food. Because we look at everything in a very gross way. We don't realize that gross comes from the subtle. Therefore, if someone was angry when they cook the food and the people eat it, if they're a little aware, then they actually become angry also. They get a little frustrated. Besides the fact that it's probably full of chilies and things to demonstrate the anger of the cook. He throws all kinds of hot spices into it. Put everyone in fire. But the consciousness is also infused. Just like when a devotee is in very good, nice consciousness and they cook, then the food, even they may not be such an expert cook, but if the food is imbued with bhakti, then it actually elevates the consciousness of the people who are eating it. So if everything else goes wrong, but if we honor the food in the sense that we appreciate that this is being given to me by Krishna, and then we eat it in order to actually chew the food, for instance, concentrate on it, not listen to prajalpa while we're eating, but actually concentrate on the food with appreciation, remembering Krishna while we're eating the food, that this is Krishna prasad, then that's honoring prasad. It's not the time where we forget Krishna. It should be the time when we remember him the most. Because eating is the most basic, most essential part of our material existence. Without eating, we won't have a material existence. So therefore, it's the time where we should honor Krishna the most and remember him the most with most appreciation. Because we shouldn't take it for granted that we're getting something to eat by Krishna's mercy. And especially food which is offered to Krishna and which is infused with Krishna's consciousness. Because Krishna also has consciousness. And when it's offered to Krishna and Krishna eats the food becomes infused with Krishna's consciousness. And if we chew the food very nicely, we'll be able to taste Krishna's consciousness in the food. And that will help us remember Krishna naturally. And therefore Krishna, eating the prasadam, will be a very deep and loving meditation on Krishna with great gratitude. And that will end our desire to lord it over the material nature, because that's the difference between eating Krishna Prashadam and eating ordinary food. Ordinary food increases our desire to lord it over the material nature, because our consciousness, when we're not eating Krishna consciousness, Krishna's food in Krishna consciousness, eating is like the basic, the most fundamental way of lording it over the material nature, controlling it and enjoying it, chewing it to little pieces, having it enter into our body to empower us to eat more carrots, more broccoli, more of this, more. And then with that energy, we go out, we conquer the world. Anything else? Chala, Granta Rashmad Bhagavad Gita, Kijai.